Good morning. Welcome to your turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us as this is our pre-Thanksgiving show, and we promise it will not be a turkey. My guest is Walton Francis. He's the editor and author of, for the past 30-plus years, of Checkbook's Guide to Federal Health Employee Plans, and it is the literally the Bible for people who are trying to get the best deal during this open season, which runs through December 10th. So you still have plenty of time, but the emphasis is you should do something. You can save $2,000, in some cases even more, by picking the right plan, and you can lose $2,000, I would assume, by doing nothing or picking the wrong plan. And this is the Walt and Mike show today, but I could actually leave the room. Walt is the man. But, Walt, before we get down to I ask you some questions. We asked readers this morning if they have any questions, and a number of them responded. Michelle from the IRS, we're not going to read yours because I didn't understand it, but I thought Walt would. He didn't either. So if you will resend it, it would be great. Connie in California says, every year, information for open season gets less and less. For retirees, it's almost non-existent. In Northern California, we basically have two choices. Called OPM, said they'd send information, thought it was a positive step, received a booklet for last year, not 2013. Quite frustrating. Is there any hope left? Medicare is sounding better and better, but with a penalty of 10% for years over 65, that's a problem. Is there anything a retiree can do? But I wrote her back, because this came in yesterday, and I said, you do have more than two choices, no matter where you are. She has a number of choices, correct?
She's got about 20. My guess, though, is she might well be in Kaiser. And Kaiser, Northern California, has taken a pretty bad hit simply because it's got so many retirees who don't have Medicare. And they're very expensive, and they drive the premiums up. But she's also complaining about lack of information. Let me just say, the U.S. government's got this Go Green thing. It's pervasive, and the Office of Personnel Management is part of it. And so they have cut back a lot on the kinds amounts of paper they send people, so you don't, for example, automatically get a brochure in the mail anymore. In fact, for this year, it's basically a postcard kind of thing you get to tell you there's an open season. You've got to use the World Wide Web. The time has come. And OPM at opm.gov/insure has really a superb website that presents any of the information you need to know about all the plans available to you and a whole lot more besides. I always, of course, like to recommend Checkbook's website, guidetohealthplans.org. We provide a huge amount of information as well, specific to every plan, ability to download plan brochures, and so on. And the trick, by the way, in downloading these brochures is not to print a copy of the 100-page document, but to open it on your computer screen and then use the little search function, like if you care about maternity care or hearing aids, whatever your topic is, you can quickly find the paragraph or page that deals with it.
And they all have a similar page, I understand, that shows the changes in benefits, if any.
Right. There's a change page right up in the early section, usually around page 10 or 12 of the brochure. And there's a summary of benefits a couple of pages from the end, plus premium information right at the end. So whatever you want to quickly find, you can find in a brochure. Plus, OPM has something they call the Guide to Federal Benefits, roughly, which covers a lot more than just health insurance, long-term care, and some other things. That gives summary information comparing every plan. Back to our website, guidetohealthplans.org, we give summary information comparing every plan, and also something that no one else does. We actually tell you how much money you're likely to gain or lose by being in Plan A or Plan B, taking into account not just the premium, but your likely out-of-pocket expenses depending on your age, your family size, your health status, and other factors that have a huge effect on healthcare costs.
Right, and you break it down into a number of categories. The percentage likelihood of what your expenses will be if you have a normal year, which most of us hopefully do, that's different from the premiums. It may be considerably more in out-of-pocket costs.
Yeah, we do the good year, the bad year, and the average, and the in-between. We actually have a lot of more detailed calculations behind all that, so that we give people a chance to see what happens if my expense is very high. And we show, for example, the catastrophic guarantee in each plan, and there's a lot of gaps and loopholes and footnote-y kinds of things about those the figures the plans say claim their catastrophic limit is, and we adjust them to take account of that so they're actually comparable. And, you know, the one that leaves out prescription drug expenses is not given credit for being better than it is.
Right, and as you point out, too, and it's something that many, I say, people miss, is the reason you buy health insurance is to protect you in a worst-case scenario. So you want to look at the catastrophic limits, especially the way you break them down in your book.
Yep.
Very important.
Very important.
Here's one from Brian. He is in the subject is standard versus high option. A lot of people wonder about that. He is in GEHA standard option. Says the high option pays 90% of sum available costs versus 85% for standard option. How does one know if paying the higher premium over 26 pay periods is equivalent to the 5% more coverage offered by the high option plan?
Well, the easiest way to find out is to look at Checkbook's Guide to Health Plans. Look up your family size and age, and I'm just going to, you know, pick an example here of, let's just say, an annuitant 55 to 64 without Medicare, and let's say he's single. And we estimate that if you're in GEHA standard option, taking into account both the premium and the out-of-pocket costs, that your average cost, and this includes a lot the bad years, which could be multi-hundred thousand dollar years, will be around $3,200. And GEHA high option be around $4,200. So there's a $1,000 saving overall net from being in GEHA standard option. Even though its benefits aren't quite as good, the premium is so much lower.
Right. And the rule of thumb is that just because it's a Cadillac plan in premiums, that doesn't mean it has better coverage.
Absolutely not. In fact, we have lots of examples we know of where the lower cross spread has benefits better than many of the higher cost spreads.
Okay. We've got a caller on the other line. Are you there? Is this Amethyst?
Yes. Hello.
Yeah. Good. Hi. What can we do for you?
I don't know how much background she gave you. I'm married with two kids. We're with an HMO right now. And I'm looking to switch. I don't really like the referral process. but I'm looking for something that also would that fares well with getting reimbursement for, like, neuropsych evaluations and things like that. It has good drug prescription stuff. We do have asthmatics and things like that.
Okay.
Which HMO are you in?
MDIPA.
Okay. I'd suggest if you're generally comfortable with HMOs other than the referral issue, what I suggest is first thing to do is to check out a couple of the others and see if they may not work a little better for you. And there are a couple that we rate as particularly good buys. One of them is Aetna Open Access Basic, Care First, Blue Choice, High Option. These are D.C. area. And obviously you're in the D.C. area if you're in MDIPA.
Right.
A lot of people really like Kaiser in a situation like yours. That's a pretty radical change from, you know, fee-for-service medicine because you're using the Kaiser stable of doctors and so on. But they tend to be particularly good for families, where, for example, where a kid may have chronic asthma or something like that and need repeat visits and so on, because you can get it set up so you can get in and out fast and not, you know, have the usual wait at a doctor's office. So any of those look good. If you want to look at the fee-for-service plans, among the really best buys are Blue Cross Basic Option, Foreign Service if you're eligible, GEHA Standard Option, and I'll throw one, APWU High Option. Those are the first few to look at, NALC. There's a number of good buys on both ends of this. There's even a friskier set of plans, the high deductible consumer driven. Let me stop there, though. What I want you to do is think about HMO versus traditional, and if you want to throw into that high deductible, think about that. But I want you to compare then a couple of brochures on the precise benefit that your child needs. Okay, see what they say.
And in the fee for service too, she should always check to see if her doctor is in the network. Correct.
Yep. But I heard you trying to say something, Amethyst. Have we?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm looking for them. MDIPA doesn't have, like, I found that they don't have, like, a huge network. I don't feel like they do. Maybe I'm wrong. of doctors, it's always kind of a struggle for me, you know, that when the doctor will give me some referrals and I'll have to call each of the people they gave me and then, you know, try and figure out which ones take the insurance. And there's not usually a whole lot of overlap.
That shouldn't be happening. I mean, typically, one of the advantages of HMOs is they have a network of preferred providers who are supposed to have contractually agreed to accept patients in the HMO. But I'm not quarreling with what you're saying. I'm simply saying another HMO might work better for you.
Okay. So not to discount the HMO.
Right.
Very good. Okay. Thank you, Amethyst.
All right. Thank you.
Great name. I was in an HMO years ago, and that was the same problem, the referrals. It got to where I got it as soon as I could. Need to take a short break here. You're on Federal News Radio talking with Walton Francis of Washington Consumer Checkbook about your health plan choices for 2013. Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Walton Francis. He's editor of the Washington Consumer Checkbook Guide to Federal Health Plans, and it is the Bible for people who are looking for the best deal for their 2013 health coverage. And our phone number here, if you have any want to call us, is 202-465-3080. That's 202-465-3080. Have a question here from Robert. And he says, thanks for addressing the FEHB maze and providing expert guidance on the choices. I write to ask what Walton Francis would advise to a 62-year-old with 23 years of federal service with a pre-existing heart disease condition, anticipating retiring in early 2014, with has no dependents in terms of selecting an FEHBP carrier. Additionally, if it doesn't muck things up too much, is 2013 going to collide with Obamacare, or does that not commence until 2014? From Rob.
Let me start with the Obamacare part of it. Obamacare actually started the year it was enacted in bits and pieces. So one of the early changes was this allow you to cover your dependent children up to age 26. So that's, of course, very important for some families. There are no real big changes occurring in the FEHBP this year related to that program, but I'll mention the two that are sort of most striking. One is what were already very good preventive care benefits in the FEHBP, very broad and usually free, are now in every plan, free, and the deductible does not apply, and they're even broader. All the immunizations, even for adults, not just kids. I mean, it's so no matter what plan you join, you'll get a great preventive benefit. The other change this year is not in the health plans, but it's in the allowable cost for setting up a flexible spending account. It used to be you could create an account up to $5,000 a year, and starting this January or this open season that we're in, the limit is $2,500. So that doesn't affect very many people because there aren't very many people who set up those really high spending levels, but it's a change. And by the way, in 2014, there won't be a whole lot of changes that affect the FEHBP. It's going to affect lots of other people a lot more. That said, now he's asking for advice on plan. We have a set of plans we typically recommend. They work well for people in a lot of situations, and one of them is including, your age and pre-existing condition. So I would take a look at some of the same plans I mentioned to Amethyst, Foreign Service if you're eligible, Blue Cross Basic, APWU High, GEHA Standard. There's a loophole in GEHA Standard. It doesn't cover name brand prescription drugs as well as any of the others that I named. There's a loophole in Blue Cross Basic. It doesn't pay anything out of network. All the others, you use preferred providers, and you pay nominal copays, $30 a visit, that kind of thing. But when you go out of network, they may pay half. Blue Cross Basic doesn't pay anything out of network. In that respect, it's more like the HMOs. Any of the high deductible plans would be a good choice for you. GEHA, MHBP, Aetna. One of the things those plans do, particularly when you're in your 50s and 60s, is let you do what are called catch-up contributions to your health savings account.
Like the 401k.
Like a 401k or an IRA on steroids. Yeah, it's better than those.
Right.
So, you've got a lot of good, and plus, there's half a dozen really low-priced HMOs.
And in his case, a pre-existing condition doesn't make any difference in the federal program.
Absolutely none. Otherwise, open season would be worthless.
Yeah. Okay. Got a phone call here. Yes, are you with us?
Yes.
Yes, sir. What's the question?
My wife and I both have are retirees with Medicare Part B, and we currently have GEHA Standard, and we're looking for alternatives, or whether we should stay with GHA part standard. I guess prescription drugs is our main thing because pretty much everything else is covered right now. But that's what we're trying to figure out.
Okay. I think, number first, you're in a very good place in general. It's the drug issue I just mentioned. It's the problem in your case. But there are a couple others you could take a look at. The mail handlers, they call themselves MHBP, has what they call a Medicare pilot, and they pay the standard Part B premium. Okay, so it's a pretty good buy, pretty good deal. I'm not sure you're going to find the drug coverage a whole lot better, but I'd sure take a look at it. Blue Cross Basic doesn't give you the same 100% wraparound with all your expenses covered, you know, zero for doctors, zero for hospital, the way GHA and MHVP do, but it's such a good deal anyway, and the premium's so low that you might take a look at Blue Cross Basic. One other point about the drug expenses, and by the way, there's a couple of plans that are a little more pricey but are very good on drug coverage. NALC is certainly one of them, and I would, you might also take a look at Samba Standard. So there's a half dozen plans that you could check. But here's another option for you. Sign up for a Medicare Part D drug program. They work very well with GHA. The deal is you'll pay a premium, and it depends on whether just one of you has these expensive name brand drugs or both. But for one person, the Part D premium is around $400 a year. That plan would be primary. Before you join one, you check to make sure that your drugs are actually preferred in that Part D plan. You do that on the Medicare.gov website. Then GHA will come in and wrap around behind it, and you'll wind up getting reimbursed for almost all your drug costs. So that's a way to stay right where you are in a really excellent place, except for that drug angle, and not have to go agonize over all these other choices.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. All right. Our number here is 202-465-3080. That's 202-465-3080. And another question from Brian here, and this, I guess, is important because of the catastrophic angle. He says, I've pretty much settled on the health plan I want for 2013, but information on this particular topic, that is the catastrophic coverage, would be helpful. And as you pointed out, the reason you buy health insurance is for catastrophic. It's like buying fire insurance. You hope you won't need it, but you want
right.
it.
Right. And it's one of the things we really focus on in the guide. And, you know, we actually, as I say, we not only present you the catastrophic limit for every plan side by side so you can see which ones are better, but we make sure that we adjust for any of the gaps or loopholes that some of them have.
Yeah, I'm looking at your breakdown here, and the a single person under 55, the catastrophic limit is 52 something a year, as opposed to some that go up to 13,500. So, well worth looking at.
Yeah, there's some big differences.
Yeah, we have a call. 202-465-3080. Do we have a call? Yes. Are you on? Are you with us? Oh, no call. Sorry. All right. Good. Here comes a call even as we speak. Yeah, this catastrophic, you can't emphasize it enough that it's the, I guess it's the primary thing to look at because of a worst case scenario.
It's why you buy insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And this, we haven't said much about these HD plans, high deductible, and the other, what is it?
Consumer-driven.
Consumer-driven, yeah. Consumer, the high deductible, I guess, explains itself. There is a high deductible, but there's a payoff if you don't use it.
Yeah, the two plan, those two sets of plans are very similar. They both have a high deductible. They both have some kind of savings account. In the consumer-driven, it's called an HRA account, health reimbursable arrangement. And it's one of the, it's not use or lose. It can grow over time. But if you leave the plan, you lose it. You don't own it. I just mentioned the other, and we'll come back in a little more detail. The health savings account and the high deductible plans is your money. That's the IRA on steroids. You keep the rest of your life, add to it throughout your working career until you get insured by Medicare.
Great. Okay. The phones are lighting up now. So, yeah, are you with us?
Hello.
Yes. What can we do for you?
The reason I'm calling calling is my husband was just recently diagnosed with very high-grade prostate cancer that he's going to start receiving treatment for. We currently have the Blue Cross Blue Shield standard option. And I was just calling to see if you thought that was still a good choice with this recent diagnosis.
Sure. Let me just say it's a good choice in a whole wide range of circumstances. It is sort of the Cadillac plan.
The
problem with it is simply that its premium is considerably higher than many other plans whose benefits are almost as good, but not quite as good.
Okay.
But in a situation like yours, it's got a very good catastrophic benefit, which is going to be important to you.
Okay.
It's got good drug coverage. It depends. There's multiple possible treatments for the prostate cancer, but that plan, Blue Cross Standard, really all these plans, but let's just focus. It will cover, you know, whether it's radiation or hormone therapy or surgery, you know, whatever route this takes, it's going to cover you pretty well. So I would say it's a good time not to add to your worries by worrying about choosing another health plan.
Okay.
Stay where you are and concentrate on getting the medical problem taken care of.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck to you both. Another call? Are we on the line? Oh, okay. That's a good point that is a case where one of the more expensive plans is the better plan.
Right, and it also illustrates there's lots of reasons to pick Plan A over Plan B. They aren't just financial. It's your comfort level, how well you sleep at night. It's the size of the provider pool network that goes with the plan. There are a lot of, you know, amethyst problem. In fact, I guess in retrospect, I should have said to her, all the national plans have a much broader network than the HMOs, so she's probably a good candidate for one of the national plans simply because she wanted to, you know, have more access. So everyone has their own unique family situation and set of preferences. Some people love HMOs, some people hate them, and so on. So all that should influence your open season choice. There is good choices in every category of plan.
Very good. Need to take a short break here, talking with Walton Francis about your health insurance choices for 2013. We'll be right back. Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Walton Francis. He's the editor and author of Consumer Checkbook Guide to Federal Health Plans. And we just had a caller who said, how do you get checkbook? Good question.
Okay. There are a number of ways, but the one I recommend is just straightforward and simple. Go to our website, www.guidetohealthplans.org. That's Guide to Health Plans. That's all one word, .org. And you can either order there a print copy or the online version. We can do more on the online version, so I recommend it over the print version. But some people, you know, have that old-fashioned lust for paper in their hands. One of the things you can do also before you even buy it is check quickly to see if your agency has provided a free subscription to all employees. Quite a few federal agencies have done this. They don't always advertise it very well during open season, but you may be one of the lucky ones who already has free access. If not, it's very inexpensive, and it will answer an awful lot of your questions. We also provide free upfront the text of the guide, okay, not all the plan ratings, but if you want to read about, for example, our advice on how to handle Medicare or understand how high deductible plans work or answer, you know, a whole lot of questions like that, we provide that free for anyone who goes to the website. You can also call Checkbook. The phone number there is 202-347-7283. 202-347-7283 or guidetohealthplans.org.
Okay, and I did a column earlier this week. I think it may have been Monday, but in it, it is the link that tells people what agencies have subscribed for their employees, and it's very helpful because in some cases, a whole agency like OPM, in some cases, part of an agency, but it saves you some money and some time. Joanne has been waiting patiently online. Joanne, are you with us?
Yes, how are you this
morning? We're good.
I'm calling because I have had MDIPA for a number of years and have been very happy with it, but am distressed to see that this year their prescription drug level 2 and 3 has been raised, copays have been raised to $30, $150, and $250. That seems really excessive to me, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Okay. Let me just say first, all these plans tend to fiddle every year with their prescription drug benefits. Uh-huh. So that's one of the things you need to check before you even stay. You're one of the smart ones. You're checking.
Good point.
A lot of people don't check. What they tend to be trying to do, and OPM strongly encourages this, is to make generic drugs very inexpensive, you know, typically a $5 or $10 copay, and the name brand drugs a lot pricier. And I'm sure that's what's going on with MDIPA. I think it's very straightforward. If you're using some drugs that are going to cost you a lot more, you should consider changing plans. You will find there's pretty big differences in the drug benefits, including, and this is very important, they typically have what they call preferred name brand drugs and then other name brand drugs. And it's the others that are typically way out of sight. So you want to have your drugs be in that preferred category. All the plans have a formulary online.
Right.
Okay, so you can, and you don't want to have to go, there's about 24, 25 right. plans in the D.C. area. That's just too many to check one by one. But I would say look at a couple of the bargain plans we've talked about. If you otherwise, you sound like you're an HMO person, you could take a look at the Aetna Open Access plan. Kaiser is very inexpensive if you, you know, want to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a number of choices, Care First, Blue Choice, High Option.
Uh-huh.
Take a look at two or three of the HMOs, and if you can then move on and look at the national plans also if you want to. See how they're going to handle your drug, and you may find that's a beneficial switch for you. Always keep in mind, there may be an alternative drug, either a generic or one that's what they call therapeutically equivalent. So if there's an alternative for you, you could talk to your doctor about changing your medicine, and then you might not have to change plans. But I would not sit there and take a very high price, you know, in a plan.
Right,
That's why we have open season.
Uh-huh. Well, I've had cancer, so you never can tell what's going to be prescribed. And this just sent up red flags for me.
Good for you shopping.
Thank you
okay.
very much.
Thank you, Joanne. Good luck. All right. Yeah, that's a very important thing. And again, the numbers of people who actually change, we don't know how many people shop, but the number who change is strikingly low, with the exception being the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's typically, you know, 5% or fewer change plans during open season. I think people just get stuck in a plan they've been in forever. The service is pretty good, and they grumble because the premiums go up every year, but they don't realize their plan may have gotten out of whack. I think the number changing in open season has been a little higher in the last few years because the disparity between Blue Cross Basic and Blue Cross Standard has gotten so big that a fair number of people have switched out of Standard into Basic, which is you know, a very good shopping choice, provided you understand that there are some things you give up, like out-of-network access.
Could you look at that? Because that's the big kid on the block, Blue Cross Blue Shield, in all its iterations and families. But what is the sort of the difference between the basic and the standard, other than premiums?
Which is a huge difference.
Yeah.
The basic difference is they both use Blue Cross Network and preferred providers, but it's a little more limited in the basic. There's several categories of preferred provider, and the basic very tightly limits you. I think that's the reason that you can get such lower premium. They're keeping you in network and trying to keep your costs down. The standard option lets you go out of network, and the deal is, and all the national plans except Blue Cross Basic do this, something like we'll pay 70% of the cost of our allowance to an out-of-network physician. Well, their allowance is probably half what that physician charges or less. So you're probably going to get reimbursed less than half your cost of that out-of-network visit. So the Blue Cross Basic plan says, let's not kid around. If you want to go out of network, you pay it all.
Okay.
So that's what you give up in basic.
But particularly in a place like the Washington area, Blue Cross has an awful lot of people that are part of their network.
Yeah, they have a vast network. And if you're willing to be, and by the way, one of the features on Checkbook's guide is you can put in your doctor's name, more than one, two or three or four family doctors you use, and we will tell you which plan or plans your doctors are in. So that can really simplify your choice. But you can also go look up the provider network on plan websites, and they typically have a search thing where you say, I want a board certified surgeon of or something like that, and I want one within 10 miles, and they'll give you a list of names.
Good deal. Back to the phones. Are you with us?
Hi, this is Renee.
Yes, ma'am.
I would like to know, what is a good option for Blue Cross Blue Shield standard option? I hear a lot of talk about the basic, but what's another alternative if you want to move from that?
Oh, okay. To move from Blue Cross Standard, there's a lot of lower cost options that have coverage that's in several cases as good, or in all cases almost as good. You know, so it's mainly a premium difference. I would say if you're eligible, Foreign Service, okay, which only you have to be in the foreign affairs community. But Blue Cross Basic, which we were just talking about, we rate very highly in almost all circumstances. GEHA Standard Option, which we've discussed a little earlier. APWU High Option and NALC. Those are the ones I'd look at first. If you're going to stay in this national plan, preferred provider, and you can go out and network the fee-for-service in all those I just mentioned except Blue Cross Basic. But you can also do spectacularly well in some of the high-deductible and consumer-driven plans. In some cases, if you know, you get your annual physical, and if you don't have very many doctor visits otherwise, you could wind up the year with a savings account that's more that's bigger in dollars than your tax-preferred premium. So, you know, there's ways to save money in that area, and all those plans have very good catastrophic protection. That's another thing to be said for them. And finally, any of the lower-priced HMOs are going to be much better buys in terms of what's your total likely cost than Blue Cross Standard Option. And those include Kaiser Standard and High Options, Aetna Open Access Basic, CareFirst Blue Choice High. So, you know, those are ones I take a look at first. That's quite a long list, but that's the point. There's about a dozen high-cost plans in this area, and there's about a dozen low-cost plans where you almost, and I don't want anyone to throw a dart, but if you throw a dart at one of the lower-cost plans, you're going to save a lot of money.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. Good. Hey, on that, on the high deductible, we didn't finish up with that, but the high deductible and the savings account plans, I have a hard time wrapping my head around those.
Well, they work in a fairly complicated way. And by the way, the brochures explain them very
okay.
well. So if you want, if you're interested, take a look at the GEHA high deductible brochure, the MHBP high deductible brochure, the Aetna high deductible brochure, and they will really clearly explain what's going on, but they're trying to make you be a frugal user of healthcare. They're trying to make you have skin in the game. So that's the idea of you get your annual physical, but then you have to use your savings account for the next, typically it might be $1,000, okay, for the rest of your for additional visits, and then you have to maybe face a $1,500 you pay everything deductible, a big deductible, and then regular insurance kicks in, and you're well protected against the worst.
Need some thought. Need to take a short break here. We'll be right back on Federal News Radio. Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn, talking with Walton Francis of Consumer Checkbook. And, you know, everybody in Washington claims to be busy. Walton Francis may possibly be the busiest man in town, particularly during the open season. And I know you have to rush out of here to attend another function. But just before you go, where do people get Consumer Checkbook?
Simplest way, just go online, www.guidetohealthplans.com. That's all one word, .org, guidetohealthplans.org. And you can just order it online. And you know, it's also available in local bookstores. And you can make a telephone call to Checkbook. They're in the phone book. But we think the online way to go is simplest. And it gives you a chance to look at some of the actual text of the book and check to make sure that your agency does or does not offer a free subscription, in which case you can use the agency password and go right on in the website.
I've seen the book here in Barnes & Noble and at CVS, too, and it's $9.95. But, well, thank you very much for being with us, and you are free to go.
Thanks,
thank
Mike.
You. Thank
Bye.
You. All right, we're going to get Sean Riley on the line. Sean, are you with us?
I'm here.
Hey, thank you for waiting patiently, sir. Hope you learned a lot.
Absolutely. And happy Thanksgiving to you and your listeners.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Same to you. This is going to be a good one. John, there's so much going on, even though the Congress is relatively inactive, and I read in the Politico that Washington is a ghost town on the Thanksgiving week. What's the latest on sequestration? When are we going off the cliff?
Same as all. Date still as scheduled, January 2nd, so hope it's not too far to the bottom. But there's still, you know, there's you know, continued hope that Congress and the White House will come together to do something about it. The question is what. It's kind of interesting. Yesterday, the head of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke, gave a speech essentially warning that if they don't do something about it, it could really push the economy into some serious trouble. And so those are the kind of factors, I think, that will continue to drive whether or not they are able to reach an agreement or not.
Now, the interesting thing, correct me if I'm wrong, is when they approved this ticking time bomb, it was pretty much bipartisan, and the White House signed on to it. And yet now just about everybody that is anybody is warning that this thing can't happen.
Yeah, it is ironic, isn't it? Yes, this was passed with bipartisan support, and as you know, it was done essentially to avoid a major crisis over raising the federal debt ceiling. This was part of the deal to increase the nation's borrowing limit, essentially put more money on the credit card. And in return, down the road, there was supposed to be an agreement on how to reduce future deficits by a significant amount. And now, to their horror, everyone has woke up and found out what they've done. And the one other thing everyone can agree on is they never really thought or wanted sequestration to take effect. The consequences were supposed to be so awful that they would reach and come to some sort of agreement to head it off. Unfortunately, they haven't quite gotten to that point yet, and now we're down to a little less than a month and a half to reach that point.
And if it happens, you're talking about, 8 to 9% across-the-board cuts in many, but not all, federal programs?
Yeah, just about everything on the discretionary side. And one big exception would be the Veterans Affairs Department apparently would be completely exempted, according to the White House. And then the president also plans to exempt uniformed military personnel. And there are other, like Social Security would be exempt on the mandatory, the entitlement side. But just about everything else, again, on discretionary, would be hit.
Yeah, including the IRS?
Yes, including the IRS. I don't recall there being an exemption for them. Good
point. Yeah, they've had this. They did this in the 70s, and I think we talked about it one time, but they immediately exempted defense, VA, Social Security, IRS, and the Postal Service. So at the end of the day, the sequestration as it was then only hit a few agencies, and then they dropped that after a while. The impact on the federal workforce, worst case scenario, is that 20 days of furlough, is that out of reason?
Yeah, and then after that they get into around 20 days or so, and then I think they get into, essentially they have to go to a reduction in force, and OPM has put out a fair amount of guidance on that. And the prediction is that, the Office of Managed Budget has not issued any real formal guidance on how agencies should handle sequestration, but the expectation among experts is that there would be ultimately, tens of thousands of furloughs across the federal government simply because that's a relatively quick and simple way for agencies to cut costs.
Are you hearing in your travels from people who say it's not going to happen?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but also hearing from people who say it will happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think there's still, and again, I think it's because of, you're certainly seeing pressure from the business community. Speeches like Federal Reserve Chairman Bernanke's yesterday, I think may perhaps hold out some hope of that Congress and the White House will be able to forge an agreement, just because nobody wants to be Target is the one responsible for pushing the economy, let alone the federal government, off a cliff.
Switch over to the Postal Service now. I know you've been watching it carefully. It went really in the red the other day.
Just a little bit. 15. Postal Service gave the final numbers for its fiscal 2012 financial results, and the total loss was $15.9 billion, which is around three times the loss for fiscal 11.
And when they say loss, I mean, I know more people aren't writing letters, and first class volume is down, I assume. But also, this has to do with their prepaying their retirement benefits.
Yeah, an awful lot of this loss, awful as it looks, was really just on paper. The Postal Service by law is required to pay about $5.6 billion each year to pre-fund retiree health care benefits for future retirees. And so they had, the Congress had deferred the payment that was due in fiscal 11 to fiscal 12. So you had about 11, and the Postal Service didn't make either one. So you had about $11 billion in losses from that. In addition, you had about $2.4 billion in It's complicated, but sort of long-term workers' comp charges, which again, at this point, are just on paper. They're not an actual expenditure, but they do have to be booked. And so, as it happens, there was actually a sliver of positive news that insofar as the Postal Service operating loss, I mean, this is, you know, basically the revenue versus direct expenses, actually shrank a little bit. It was, I think, $2.7 billion in fiscal 2011. This, for fiscal 2012, was $2.4 billion. But, yeah, the overwhelming majority of the Postal Service losses, you know, are due to congressionally required, you know, to a congressionally mandated requirement.
Okay, Sean, thank you so much. They're furloughing us here. We've got to get out. But have a good Thanksgiving. Have a good week, everybody. Hope to see you back here next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Thanks, Mike.